It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Barrett.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In recent months, state government officials have been going back and forth over whether workers who receive federal disability payments should also be eligible to get unemployment benefits from the state. And if so, how much?
A draft bill in the state legislature would revise Wisconsin's unemployment insurance law. That bill would repeal existing laws that prevent people who receive Social Security disability benefits from also getting unemployment benefits if they lose their job. But the bill would also introduce a limit on how much they can receive.
The state ban on receiving both types of benefits went into effect a dozen years ago. Republican lawmakers decided that getting both disability and unemployment benefits constituted double dipping or even fraud.
But in a class action lawsuit brought by Wisconsin workers, a federal judge ruled last year that the laws discriminate against people with disabilities. Now the State Department of Workforce Development is being asked to compensate people who were denied jobless pay over the last decade.
For a look at this issue, we're joined by labor and employment attorney Victor Forberger. He represented some of the plaintiffs in the class action suit. Victor, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you for having me.
Let's lay some groundwork here. What makes someone eligible for Social Security disability insurance, and then what makes someone eligible for unemployment insurance?
Well, we all are pay into the Social Security system. And usually you get Social Security when you hit your designated retirement age. But there's a program in effect for those who get disabled at some point in their lives. You know, you lose your legs, something happens to you, a mental illness, something that prevents you from working. And the technical term for Social Security purposes, you can no longer participate in substantial gainful activity. When that happens, you then become eligible essentially for your Social Security benefit early. So you may be at age 40, you become disabled, you apply for SSDI, and that's a cumbersome, complicated process. You get approved, and then you start getting you're getting your Social Security benefit early, and that's called Social Security Disability Insurance or income, or SSDI.
And then, in turn, unemployment insurance. Is that for anyone who loses a job?
Yeah, unemployment is a completely different orientation. Unemployment is based on when you lose work through no fault of your own, and the amount you get is based on your earnings from a prior year in all your employment. So whether it's part-time, full-time, whatever that is.
So the 2013 and 2015 laws that were based on the assumption that people who do get disability benefits don't work and therefore shouldn't get unemployment insurance, is it common for people who are on disability to work, to supplement their income?
Right. Like most people who get Social Security continue to work after they retire to some extent because they need additional income to be able to support themselves. Disabled folks are no different. That Social Security benefit they're receiving usually is not enough to live on, so they need additional work. And in fact, Social Security has a whole host of programs that help people with their disability find full-time work and to stop receiving SSDI benefits. You know, and typically, many of these programs are under the umbrella called Ticket to Work. So lots of disabled people who get SSDI benefits work either part-time, some even full-time, because that's what they need to do both to support themselves and to return to, you know, substantial gainful activity. The issue here is that, you know, in these laws that were passed, there was this stereotype or presumption that once you are disabled, you stop working completely. And that simply is not true. And so there was this false presumption or stereotype on the basis of this law that got created. And initially, the projection was it only affected about 50 people in the state. And then once it got enacted and the numbers started coming in, it looked like it started affecting thousands.
And so this summer, then, the judge orders the Department of Workforce Development to stop disqualifying unemployment compensation applications simply because an applicant also receives SSDI. Is that right?
Yes, that's what's going on right now.
And so what is the status of that? Where are we at?
Yeah, so it's a class action. And so my apologies if I have to go into a little bit of legal specifics here. So with a class action, you have to define who's involved, who's at stake, and who's going to get the benefits from this lawsuit. The court approved two classes. One of those classes is those who got denied when they filed their initial claims. So a little bit of background here. When you file for unemployment benefits, you actually have to do two different things. You first file an initial claim where you indicate you've suffered some kind of qualifying job loss in which you want to start claiming benefits. That initial claim, however, doesn't pay you anything. If you want to get paid unemployment benefits, you have to do something else. You have to file a weekly certification in which you have to meet all the criteria in that weekly certification to establish your eligibility to be paid unemployment benefits for that week. It's a complicated process in Wisconsin, more so than in most other states, where you've got to track this initial claim and these weekly certifications and which week you're filing for. And the claim filing process doesn't really help you track all that information. So one of the things now with this is, so people who may have been denied unemployment benefits in 2016 because of this SSDI eligibility ban now will have the opportunity to be paid benefits for the weeks they were unemployed. But in 2016, when they got denied, they probably didn't file weekly certifications for the weeks they were unemployed. So now they're going to have to go back and figure out which weeks they were unemployed in 2016 and have the opportunity to file those weekly certifications for those missing weeks. One of the arguments or issues we're having with the Department of Workforce Development right now is how much help the department's going to be providing folks to let them know which weeks they were unemployed and so which weeks they have to file for. And so the second class we have is people who had to repay benefits. They were essentially charged with overpayments. So oftentimes people filed, they don't quite understand what their SSDI status is. They may have thought they were getting, there's another benefit program called Social Security Income, SSI, mm-hmm. that's not applicable here, not subject to this eligibility ban. People who are thinking they might be getting regular Social Security and not SSDI. People who are unsure of the amounts they're getting. So they didn't quite report the information correctly at the time and then got charged with overpayments. Some people, several thousand dollars of overpayments. Those who got charged with the overpayments, they'll get that money back. DWD in Wisconsin is very eager to charge fraud. So many people who didn't quite understand what was going on made mistakes and didn't report their SSDI status correctly. Like one of the named plaintiffs in our case, she missed when she officially started receiving SSDI benefits by about 3 or 4 weeks. So she got charged with fraud for not reporting it on the correct date. Because she just didn't quite understand what was happening and just didn't know at the time. That fraud determination got overturned, but for a lot of, because she appealed. But a lot of folks who don't appeal or don't understand what's going on, those fraud determinations still exist, and that's why they got charged with overpayments.
What challenges will the Department of Workforce Development face in going back and processing, all of these denied claims?
Well, that's like you're asking me in a way, what kind of challenges someone who's discriminated in the past has to overcome now compensate people for that prior discrimination. I'm not sure that's the right kind of question here. They have the information about when people file their initial claims, so they know the week at issue, and they know if there's any other determinations that were issued at that time for those folks. I mean, I don't know about you, but, who even keeps their tax returns from 5-7 years ago, let alone, some unemployment documents you filed? Almost everyone I talked to when I asked them the option, there was this little button at the end of your claim filing that said, you have the option to print or save as a PDF. Anyone do that? And almost, I think, 1 out of 100 might do that. So the department has what people originally filed and what they reported. So it would be extremely helpful the department to provide that information to folks. So when they indicate, that they were employed on these dates on their initial claim, for example, they then would have that information available to them to kind of say, oh, yeah, now I remember I was, and then I got this other job. I got laid off in February and then I got this other job in May. So I need to file now for weeks in February, March and April.
Has this been difficult for your clients to navigate?
Well, we'll see. It's going to be because we haven't started the process yet. I know for a lot of people with learning disabilities, I help them file their weekly certifications because just for the most part, they can understand the questions being asked, but being able to coordinate the information and track which weeks are being filed, it's extremely difficult for people without learning disabilities. You almost have to be a lawyer with your paperwork and tracking everything, the questions you're asked and the answers you provide to be able to kind of follow through this process.
We're talking with labor and employment attorney Victor Forberger. He has represented some of the plaintiffs in a recently resolved class action lawsuit related to disability and unemployment insurance workers on disability who were denied unemployment benefits over the last decade may receive some compensation. And Victor has been helping people navigate the claims process. So now, in recent days, there is draft legislation that is circulating in the legislature to repeal the 2013 law. What does it seek to do? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it essentially tries to follow what the federal court decision held back in, we got the original decision in July of last year where they said that the SSDI eligibility ban discriminates against disabled folks. So it's simply trying to implement that decision, say, we're not going to deny people unemployment benefits because they get SSDI benefits. Straightforward and very simple. What's been happening of late, though, is the department has always pushed that if the eligibility ban should go away, there should be 100% everlasting eternal offset against SSDI benefits. So slightly different mechanism. Instead of just denying everyone outright, it's supposed to apply a financial offset against the benefits. In practice, it would essentially mean that no one who gets SSDI benefits would get any unemployment benefits because 100% offset in the way, the unemployment benefit in Wisconsin is now actually we're the lowest in the Midwest. In Minnesota, if you file for unemployment benefits, you get over $900 a week maximum. In Wisconsin, the maximum is $370. So it's a real problem. And the Evers administration took away that offset proposal, said we're not going to do that anymore in light of this federal court case, and a bunch of legislators pushed for that as well. Just yesterday, however, the Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council, which is made up of management and labor reps, reintroduced a 50% offset proposal. I don't know why. I don't know what the rationale is for that, but they proposed this in their agreed-upon bill to now institute a 50% offset, which essentially might mean that someone who gets a very low SSDI benefit and though has substantial earnings that qualifies for them for a weekly benefit rate of probably at least $250 or more may get some unemployment benefits, but only $25, $30 a week because the offset that would be applied against them would be substantial.
Going back now to the class action suit, what are next steps here for people to file and who might be eligible? Can you give us an update there?
Well, notices should be going out right now. The court wants the notices to go out on October 1st. The department and the plaintiff's attorneys in this case, myself, Paul Kinney and Heath Straka, worked on notices with the department. We both made some substantial changes initially, but then we came down to some difficult, DWD stopped budging on some of the proposals, for example. The notices need to have essentially three pieces of information. One is, the two pieces of information must be the two classes that are subject to this eligibility issue. Mm-hmm. And you've got 90 days to file.
Okay.
So once those notices go out and you receive that notice, we want to emphasize all three of those criteria, especially the 90-day limit, because we don't want people to wait too long or think they can, there'll be exceptions after the 90 days because there probably isn't going to be any exceptions. DWD did not want to, provide very direct, pointed information to folks.
What documentation will people need to provide?
Well, they're going to have to identify themselves, and that's a complicated process now. Most likely, when you call by phone, most people are going to have moved. And let's say since if you've last filed for an appointment in 2016, you likely live at a different address now, maybe in a different state. So tracking those folks, finding out who they are, and getting them the information, then calling DWD and making sure they're the right person, because we're really concerned about people trying to call up and file fake claims. So we're hoping that DWD will actually work with the Social Security Administration on verifying people, because right, if you're claiming SSDI benefits and I move to Ohio, you know, Social Security Administration will have that information. They'll know that, you know, now that I'm living in Ohio, but in 2016 I was living in Wisconsin. So if DWD can coordinate with Social Security Administration, that will make things a lot simpler. And that's one of our requests, is for DWD to do that. If you're using the portal or kind of criteria, there's forms have to be filled out. The main initial hurdle is going to be simply verifying who you are, making sure you're the right person. Then for those who are due overpayments, it should be pretty straightforward. Once that information is verified, you've got a bank account or debit card to get that information, DWD should be processing that pretty quickly. Those who need to still file weekly certifications, that's going to be more complicated. What we're urging is for DWD to kind of provide people some of the information that DWD has on file to folks to help them kind of refresh their recollection about their unemployment history and what they were claiming.
That's what I was wondering. I mean, would these notices have information or assistance for people to know where to turn to get some help in the process?
Yeah, that's essentially is. And we're going to have there's going to be a plaintiff's website as well, where I think we will have more information about kind of issues and questions you can bring to DWD and ask for that kind of information.
After this class action lawsuit concludes and the compensation has gone out, what have we learned through this? What is the outcome here?
Well, the whole SSDI eligibility ban was one of these things that got passed very quickly without a lot of thought. And I said initially it said it only affected at most 50 people. So pretty invalid information. You know, if you want to pass laws and legislation, it's really important to study them, do it right, get some good background information, and figure out exactly what this proposal is supposed to do and why. That's like the SSDI 50% offset right now. It seems to me it's just kind of done in a not very clear process and done with not very clear objectives and without any kind of forethought about what it actually does and why. Wisconsin used to have this tradition of one of the reasons I moved here in 08 was, and coming from states like Florida and Massachusetts, which had a lot of political backroom dealing, it was nice to be in Wisconsin and come to a state where, hey, there's open discussion about these laws and what they're going to mean and what they're going to do. We've kind of gotten away from that, Wisconsin, it seems, or at least what I've witnessed, become more comparable to kind of a lot of backroom dealing. And it would be nice if we became more open and upfront about what's happening.
Victor, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Victor Forberger is a labor and employment attorney in Wisconsin. He represented some of the plaintiffs in a class action lawsuit against Wisconsin laws that prevent people who receive Social Security disability benefits from also receiving unemployment benefits if they lose their job. We talked with him about the latest developments, including a possible compensation for those who were denied benefits.